On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, Josh and I get into our player recaps for the 2019-20 season, and we kick things off with the man in the middle, Jarrett Allen. All that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome into another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I'm your host, Josh Bass. Joining me as always, my friend, the man, the myth, the legend, Marcus Barahal. Marcus, how you doing?
Josh, I'm good. I'm very excited to talk Nets. You know, it's kind of been a long time since the season ended for the Nets and since the season got started. It's been like almost a calendar year at this point. So we have a lot to look back on. More than a typical season, even though there were fewer games. So very excited to talk Nets.
Yeah. We always have our priorities here at Locked On Nets. So while the rest of the NBA universe is focusing on the conference finals, you know, we have important things to talk about, which is player reviews for Jarrett Allen, Chris Chioza, Wilson Chandler coming up. So just the real nuts and bolts that true Nets fans will appreciate. Not a lot of people know this, but Marcus has been studying for the LSAT vigorously. So this is his, like, he's gone zero dark 30, but has come up to take some air and talk some Nets. So we are very appreciative of that.
There's no better break than looking at Wilson Chandler's box plus minus numbers. That's what I always say.
I don't know what you'd want from that. And of course, before we get right into it, you can subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast these days. There's so many options out there. And of course, give us a rating and review and give us a follow on social media as well. On Twitter, I am at @JMBass_. Marcus is at Marcus Barahal. The podcast is at Locked On Nets. And yeah, as we said, we're going to be doing some player performance reviews, kind of, you know, what are the storylines? What were their stats this past year? Predictions and outlook for next season as well. And should be pretty interesting because the Nets have a lot of guys who have a lot to play for next year and, you know, might have some roster movement as well. So definitely will be one of the top teams from an intrigue standpoint next year. And I think a lot of players that are comprising that. So let's get right into it with, I think, one of the guys that is, you know, most intriguing for me, at least, it's Jarrett Allen. Marcus, why don't you walk us through a bit about his season from this past year?
Sure. I think J.A. had like a really up and down year. You know, he had a really nice run early on in the season when Caris LeVert went down and when Kyrie Irving went down. And it was him and Dinwiddie kind of running that two-man game for a while. I think we even had a podcast where we joked that that was like the Nets star duo, not Kyrie and KD. So he had a really nice run in that time. I think it was about a month long. He was averaging like 15 and 12, shooting almost 70% from the field. The Nets were winning games, which was not something that they did a ton of this year. And then, I don't know, for whatever reason, the wheels sort of came off a little bit. He had a tough stretch after that, and the team lost a bunch of games. They went 1-7 in an 8-game stretch towards the end of December and into January. DeAndre Jordan started playing over him at times, and that ultimately kind of led to the ouster of Kenny Atkinson. Was like that debate of like who should be playing the bulk of the minutes at the center spot, who should be starting, who should be finishing, all those questions. And so, I don't know, there were some real highs for J.A. this season. There were also some lows. I think it was kind of a stagnant year for him overall, even though there were definitely areas where his game took a big step forward. There were games where he regressed. His free throw shooting continued to go down. So, I don't know. He's a real complicated player. What'd you make of his season, Josh?
Yeah, So I think if you asked me this before the bubble, I would say he was a bit stagnant. You know, there were some positives, but a couple big negatives. And I think the free throw shooting is one that, you know, can't be taken lightly because that's what for someone like him, that's never going to be a dominant defensive player. He's not going to be a prime Dwight Howard. He's not going to be a Rudy Gobert. He needs to not have weaknesses on offense also. And he's a great finisher and kind of doing what he does. He's not really going to create his own shot. He doesn't have much range. And, you know, his passing has taken a step forward in the bubble, especially, but
yeah,
you know, isn't going to ever be a huge part of his game. So if you're not hitting free throws, that's just like kind of additional ways that teams can get an edge on you. And I loved, you know, his first couple of years in the league where he was a really good free throw shooter, but it all kind of collapsed back half of last season where all of a sudden he was like mid-50s in percentage and it dragged his overall percentage down to 71 for the year, which shows how good he was before that. And then this year, again, continuing to drop, like he's gone from 78 to 71 to 63. That's not good. That's a very bad trend to see for someone like Jared Allen. But I did think he took steps in the bubble, you know, aggression. He was really aggressive. And I think trying to dunk everything, which was a great sign because he could have wilted under the pressure because, you know, the Nets didn't have many ball handlers and guys that could create shots from there. There was no Kyrie. There was no Spencer Dinwiddie. You know, you can go on and on about the guys they didn't have. And for someone who relies on being set up, Jared Allen could have struggled, but he was really good. He was consistent. He had some big games. He was motivated. There were even times where he was getting the ball in the post and hitting a little jump hook, and that's never going to be his bread and butter. It doesn't have to be, given the modern NBA, but just showing that he has the confidence to take that and hit that, I think was a really good sign. And especially coming in, you know, new coach in Jacques Vaughn that just benched him as really his first big move after replacing Kenny Atkinson. You know, J.A. could have been bitter and, you know, and just gone out there and not played well, but he had something to prove and he showed it.
Yeah, he definitely played a lot better in the bubble. I mean, he had some really nice games there. The game against the Wizards where him and Thomas Bryant were kind of going at it. Bryant like came at him like thinking like, this is my team, Thomas Bryant did, because there's no Bradley Beal, there's no John Wall, Davis Bertans isn't there. So he kind of came at him like, I'm the best player on this team. I'm going to attack my matchup. And J.A. responded in that game, 22 points, 15 rebounds, made all 10 of his free throws, and the Nets got a win and kind of basically buried the Wizards at that point to kind of kick them out of having any chance at the playoffs. And there was that game. There was the game against the Kings where he had 8 assists. Like, his passing got a lot better, I think, kind of catching off the roll when LeVert was getting trapped and doubled. He did a really nice job of, like, executing those 4-on-3 plays, which – we've seen guys like Bam Adebayo and Draymond Green do really effectively. Like, J.A. is not quite on their level as a passer or as a player in general, but like just seeing him kind of making those reads and progressing at that skill is really encouraging. And if he can carry that aggression that he had in the bubble into next season, then yeah, he's their clear best option at center. He should be starting. He should be playing probably 31, 32 minutes a game. The only question is like if he can keep that up consistently, because we saw that same stretch from him in November and December where he looked really aggressive. He was putting up like 20-20 games. Him and Dinwiddie were really clicking, and then for whatever reason, it didn't really last. And so he was great in the bubble. My only concern really is just like the sample size of it and how that would manifest itself over a full season next year.
Continue supporting restaurants in your community safely. There are thousands of restaurants open for delivery on DoorDash that need your patronage now more than ever. DoorDash is the app that brings you food you're craving right now, right to your door. Ordering is easy. Just open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left safely outside your door with the new contactless delivery drop-off setting. With over 300,000 partners in the US, Puerto Rico, Canada, and Australia, you can support your local go-tos or choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, and the Cheesecake Factory. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code LOCKEDONNBA. That's $5 off and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code LOCKEDONNBA. One more time, that's code LOCKEDONNBA for $5 off your first order with DoorDash.
Yeah, and I think also what we've talked about is that the Nets offense next year is bound to be more ISO heavy just by having Kyrie and KD back, regardless of what system Steve Nash puts in place. Like, those guys are going to want to play ISO. So Allen's going to, you know, his usage is going to be reduced, and he's really going to have to be kind of a scraps guy on offense, and obviously, defensively will be a big part of what they do, but, you know, his development and kind of the touches he's getting will be stunted. So how does he respond to that? Because it is a really important year if he's on the team next year. It's not crunching time. The Nets have a ton of expectations, basically because the first year of the KD and Kyrie era was a wash and also didn't go well, given some of the injuries they had and lack of cohesion. So this is a really, really important time for Jared Allen. And, you know, DeAndre Jordan is older and he's not going to be able to play a ton of minutes per game. And they probably don't want him to because they want to keep him at least somewhat fresh. So Allen, even if he might not be starting, to your point, will probably be getting at least half the minutes, I'd say, and deserving of, you know, 30 a game or so. So how does he respond to that? And I think there's a few things that I really want to see from him. And defensively, I still think he really struggles defending stretch bigs because he's not the most natural mover, and you know, maybe he's fast in a straight line, but it's really hard for him to get out to shooters sometimes and just deal with change of direction. So I still think the Nets, you know, need to figure out how they're going to defend some of the really good stretch bigs that are out there, because I don't know if they have the answer on the team right now with Jared Allen or DeAndre Jordan. And maybe that's KD playing center, but maybe you don't want to do that. So, you know, he's really going to have to round out his game more defensively, because that's what the Nets team needs from him right now.
Yeah, I think the stretch bigs point is a good one. And I, not to make like an excuse for him, but I think part of it is not really having that reliable guy on the wing behind him who, when he switches out on the perimeter, the Nets had no defensive rebounding inside. A lot of the times it was like Joe Harris trying to block guys out, which he's good at for his size and his position, but like the Nets were just really undersized on the wing. And so if they got a guy who could play the four and who could like back Jared Allen up in terms of rebounding and in terms of maybe providing like sort of secondary rim protection if the ball gets swung around and he's kind of caught on the perimeter on a switch, I think that would help him, because I think part of it, he kind of gets in his head at times, and I think he's thinking like, okay, if I fully commit to this switch, like, yeah, maybe I'll get a contest and the guy will miss the shot, but like they're just going to get an offensive rebound and put it right back up. So let me kind of half contest and still be able to get a rebound in the play. So I think part of it is definitely personnel. Part of it is on him that he needs to just kind of commit one way or the other. But I would like to see him play with a bigger guy at the four, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, well, KD is 7 feet, so that should
be. Yeah, exactly.
Regardless of what he wants to say.
KD definitely will fix a lot of gash on this team.
Yeah. The one opportunity, like Allen, I think, has really improved also as an offensive rebounder. Like even that last regular season game against Portland where he was like getting offensive rebound after offensive rebound. And it was pretty hilarious to watch. I think that's a big opportunity for him as well, for him and DeAndre Jordan, because with the Nets, like just having so many offensive weapons, defenses are going to be constantly scrambling and out of position. So there's going to be many times where, you know, Allen's going up for a rebound against like a guard or a wing. And if he can just get that and, you know, focus on putting it right back up and dunking, he could actually have a really, really efficient season. And maybe this is bold to say, but like his field goal percentage could definitely be above the 65% it was this year.
Yeah. I mean, I totally agree. Like his shots should be easier next year than any he's ever had, just because of the talent that the Nets are going to have. And like you mentioned, he should have basically no defensive attention on him. Like, not because he's like a terrible offensive player, but just because if Kyrie's out there, if KD's out there, Karis, Joe Harris, like you have to watch all four of those guys kind of with or without the ball. Maybe LeVert, you can sag off him a little bit if he's just kind of spotting up in the corner or something. But yeah, Jared Allen is not going to be the opposing defense's primary attention like he was in the bubble at stretches. So he is going to have a real opportunity if he is still on this team, which I guess we should talk about also. But yeah, he's got a real opportunity next year.
For sure, for sure. You know, a couple of things that I want to kind of discuss here. You know, he has, like, when you look at his trends for advanced stats, like turnover rate's gone down every year. Free throw rate's gone up every year. Not free throw percentage, but free throw rate. Mm-hmm. Rebounding rate has gone up. Assist percentage has gone up. And you know, I thought he made some – he's not going to be Jokic ever, but he made some, like, basic reads in the bubble that he wasn't able to make before. And against some of these bad defenses, you know, a basic read will get you a wide, wide open three. The one thing I'll say is that his block rate is, you know, for someone that gets a ton of highlight blocks, which I don't think I've ever seen this before, he gets – probably as many highlight blocks as anyone else in the league, but his block rate itself is really not that good. You know, kind of hovering in that low four to mid four percentage points throughout his career.
Yeah, I was actually surprised by that too. Just looking at even like his raw numbers for blocks, he is basically at like 1.5, 1.25 a game for his career. And so, like, I don't know. I would have thought it was more, because I do feel like every game there's at least a couple, but I guess not.
Yeah, it really is interesting. And just to give context, like, Rudy Gobert, you know, when really kind of when he was getting off the ground as one of the best defenders in the league and still is, but maybe took a slight step back this year, his block percentage was kind of like mid sixes. So definitely a big gap there. And yeah, I'm trying to think of why that is. Like,
I mean, like, to be fair, like the block itself isn't everything. Like, you can alter a lot of shots. You can just like get good contests that force guys into tough angles and missed shots. But like, yeah, I do feel like most of his defensive plays, at least that I remember, are those big blocks. It's not necessarily like, oh, he's stuck with a guy on the switch and like got a hand up and forced an air ball kind of thing. Like, so it is surprising for him specifically, I think.
Yeah, I think he does a nice job of using verticality and using his wingspan when he's in position. There just are times when there's lapses and he's not in position. And those are the things that need to get better because, like, you know, Kyrie Irving is going to be a very bad defender. KD obviously is a really good one, has the tools to keep doing so, but who knows kind of how he's going to be. I don't think you can expect him to be the KD that he was in Golden State defensively. I think he's going to kind of be average to above average, I think is like a normal expectation for him. And then you have guys like Dinwiddie who give inconsistent effort, LeVert who, you know, has the tools to guard guards, but maybe not as much on the wing side. So Allen and DeAndre Jordan are going to have a lot of defensive responsibility. And I think that's something that, you know, probably isn't getting talked about enough. Like, they are going to have to be the anchors and covering up for a lot of mistakes on the perimeter.
Yeah. And to the point about Gobert, like, that's what he has to do in Utah. Like, Donovan Mitchell, great player, not the best defender, like kind of undersized. And yeah, it's up to that big guy to kind of make up for whatever defensive mistakes are made out on the perimeter by those guards and those wings who are going to be taking on so much of the burden offensively.
The improved Built Bar is even more delicious than before. They've got 18 amazing flavors, including nut and non-nut options. Here are the 6 new flavors. You've got caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, apple almond crisp. Those sound incredible. The bars are covered in 100% chocolate and they're soft and easy to chew. Built Bar is great for the health-conscious person. You can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. The bars are low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber, and great for the keto diet. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off of your next order. Once again, use promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com.
Yeah, for sure, Marcus. I know you put a lot of work in stats that you compiled. Anything else that you want to run through quickly for Allen before we get to some miscellaneous and an outlook for next year?
Not really. I think we talked about some of his better games as well as like a couple of those bad games where like you saw a lack of aggression, like that game the day after Christmas against the Knicks where he only took 2 field goal attempts, missed them both. There was a game against the Sixers in February where he played 13 minutes in an overtime game. DeAndre Jordan just kind of like really was taking over at that point. There were definitely times where it was really frustrating to watch him, but like you said, I think he did find something in the bubble, particularly with his passing and with his aggression. So hopefully those can carry over into next year.
Yep, let's hope so. He's going to, you know, if he's on this team, he's going to be a big cog for the Nets this year. You know, he is going to be a restricted free agent after this next season. He's been the speculation of some trade rumors. I think a lot of that was spurred, you know, once DeAndre Jordan was brought in by the Nets and clearly kind of being a favored guy of KD and Kyrie. And then also when, you know, Kenny got fired, basically, you know, big reason because he wasn't starting DJ and he was starting Jared Allen. So when you look at, you know, where he's at, I think the question of should he be on this team next year is probably an easier one, but will he?
Yeah, that's funny. He definitely should be. I think we agree on that. Will he is interesting because, as we've talked about, I think, you know, Caris LeVert has kind of worked his way into seeming like he's going to be a part of the team next year. And so if you're looking to upgrade the roster, the team doesn't have a ton of cap space. They've got sort of their mid-level exception, which I think would be about 3 years and $18 million that they can offer someone. So they're not really going to get any huge talent upgrades with that kind of price point. So really, their best option would be to trade someone and you would look to LeVert, Dinwiddie, or Allen. And as we said, LeVert kind of seems like he's entrenched with the team. Dinwiddie, Allen, I don't know, I kind of like what Dinwiddie can bring as like a scorer off the bench and a facilitator and kind of able to steer the ship when Kyrie isn't on the court. So I don't know. If they're looking to make a trade, Jared Allen seems to me like he would be most likely to be moved. The question would be if they want to do that. I mean, they've got Nick Claxton, who we've talked about, who could play more minutes if they were to move Allen as kind of like a cheaper option. You mentioned his free agent status coming up next offseason. So maybe you're looking to sort of get some return for him and before, like, you don't really want to pay him that much as a center. So there's a lot of questions about him. Do you think he's going to be on the team next year?
Yeah, I mean, I think he – I don't – I think there's no way that he's not on the team to start the season at least. Just because there's so much uncertainty when it comes to, you know, the Nets kind of defensive rotation and roster. He really needs to be on there just to see what they have in him playing with all those guys. I don't think it's fair to give up on him because he could be, you know, the piece alongside DeAndre Jordan that provides enough stability for the Nets to make a really deep run in an Eastern Conference that, you know, I think we would say now much more than 2 or 3 weeks ago is really, really wide open for next year.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I think you have to give him a chance to see what he looks like on this roster. That being said, is there a chance they could trade him during the season or at the trade deadline if a team really takes a liking to him? And obviously, I mean, contract-wise, what do you think is reasonable? Like 4 for $60? Does that sound like reasonable for a team to throw that out there?
It's really hard to say. I mean, like, there's a lot going on with the cap and just like with centers in general where I really don't know. Like, we saw Clint Capela really get paid and it seemed like that was almost immediately a mistake. So I probably wouldn't expect too many teams to pay that kind of money. Capela got like the 5-year, $90 million deal, which would be about 18 a year. So if you're doing for 4 years, that would be 72. So he'll definitely get less than that. I don't know. I would say maybe like 4 for $48 would be reasonable, but I don't know what'll be reasonable in like a post COVID world.
That's fair. But even that, I don't know if the Nets are going to be able to pay that considering, you know, if they do re-sign Joe Harris this year, which I think we all really, really want them to. Because, you know, you have Karras on the books, you have Dinwiddie, who's going to be a free agent after, I guess, 2 seasons from now. And then you have bad contracts like Torian Prince and DJ that you're trying to get off that have a couple years left. So I just don't know if that's – it would have to be sub $10 million for the Nets to really like make sense to do it just because it's like, oh, this is such good value. And he's not going to get sub $10 million a year. He's going to get more than that, you know?
And you mentioned Joe Harris also, like with his contract, I believe will take the Nets into the luxury tax like next year and the year after. And so I know Josiah said he's willing to pay it, but like he's willing to pay it for Joe Harris. Is he willing to pay it for Jared Allen is the question, I think.
Yeah, that's fair. I think a lot of it's going to be up to Marks and kind of what he wants to do. And, you know, I think he likes Allen a lot. It's kind of one of his, you know, first initial draft picks in those rebuilding years. So he's definitely improved under Atkinson's tenure. And now you have Steve and Jacques in there. So I don't know, but I think it's definitely possible that they make a trade for him at midseason because there are so many centers that you can get, you know, cheaply that are solid defenders, but and can kind of do the trick and complement with DJ. Maybe the Nets are looking at it as a way to kind of restore some of the draft capital that they've lost over the last couple of years. So, and I'm definitely not ruling that out. You know, you go out and get a guy like equivalent of our boy Norvell Pell or someone like that. Because those guys are definitely out there just given how many centers there are in the league right now. But I think what we're seeing in some of these series is that, you know, a center that can really pound the glass and protect, and, you know, and protect the glass as well and score inside, if you do have the requisite ball handlers and defenders on the wing, can actually be really, really valuable. You know, look at the Lakers who are about to make the finals and they have, you know, Dwight and JaVale just pounding the Nuggets on the glass and really bullying them inside. Allen might not be exactly that type of player, but he can definitely contribute to that. So even though guards and wings are much more important than centers these days, I don't want to dismiss someone that has a lot of talent and promise and has shown improvement and is going to be a loyal, you know, soldier and not someone that's going to cause a stir and drama, which on this Nets team right now is a good thing to have because we have a lot of guys that are going to do you know, a lot of big personalities. So I think it's good just to have some of those more quiet and reserved folks. And Jared Allen certainly fits the bill there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we saw how useful that kind of guy could be with like Ed Davis in the season before this past one. So yeah, there's definitely value in like that kind of guy who'll just come in, do his job and get out.
Yeah, and that just reminded me how much I miss Ed Davis. But I think we covered a lot of Jarrett Allen. Send us your thoughts on this. You know, I think he's going to be one of the more polarizing players. A lot of people saying, you know, great guy, but trade him and see what we can get. Others saying we need to keep him and have him be part of the young core. So very, very divisive player for such a nice guy. So I think we started off with a really good one here with Jarrett Allen. And we'll be coming up to you tomorrow, next in our series, with someone who I don't know if it's going to be as exciting, but we'll find stuff to talk about, Wilson Chandler. Until next time, be well.
Bye.